Shut up, bitches.
I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Oh, what have we here?
Go fuck yourself.
And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, NBs, this is the ESE Podcast, your weekly escape from... It's not your weekly escape. Fuck me! God damn it. It's your fucking wrestling review breakdown. It's AEW review and breakdown. You know what? It's AEW, and it's the Continental Classic. I'm a little bit bamboozled, confused, if you will. I'm on Mars. I'm not even... You know what's crazy, Charlie? I'm even taking a goddamn edible today. We're just fucked. This is gonna be fun. All right.
Long live the gummy.
The gummies. The gummy empire. No, but...
The gummies shall flow.
The gummies shall flow. Oh, no, but... Yeah, so it's... C2's in full swing. You know, it's... we're having a good time. There's a lot of really good wrestling going on lately, honestly. I would say what? You think we're on another one of those, like, diabolical? Like, it's been 4 or 5 weeks since we haven't had a show that, like, super hit. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, other than, like, a random Rampage or something, you know? But, like, I mean, look at last week's Rampage.
No,
for fuck's
sake. Cranking,
you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
we are definitely cranking right now.
Cranking. Whoa.
Big time.
True, though.
Big time.
Nah, true. The sickos are definitely, the sickos definitely did not make it through to November. That's all I'm going to say. But anyway. But yeah, that being said, I guess a little ramble at the start here. I gotta say, one of the biggest things I'm noticing about the C2 this year, Charlie, and I don't know if you've noticed this, is that it's way different than last year's. Last year's, you could tell there was a lot of things that caused there to be... I think there was a lot more going on behind the scenes that caused things to change in that than we'll ever know. You know what I mean? Like, especially with injuries and stuff. Who knows who was originally supposed to be in that tournament? It was good last year. I think this version of the tournament is so much better because... One, I think, year-odd experience of singles wrestling, Mark Briscoe is so much better than he was, right? But on top of that, you have, like, all this talent in it now because you have the ability to do it because you have so many people that are hurt right now, right? And if you really think about it, you don't even have Konosuke in there. So, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be in one of these eventually and probably win the thing, and it's going to be insane, you know what I mean? But for right now, you have as much good talent as you need and, you know, people that you know can deliver, like Brody and various others. So it's like, I don't know. It's a really interesting place to be at right now. First of all, how are you today, my friend? This is my good friend, Charlie. I'm Bane Duke, also known as the Duke of Derps. This is my good friend, Charlie. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. And I'm feeling the same with you. I thought the C2 is in full swing. I think the biggest surprise this year has been the results. I think they've been fantastic, and it's actually made the tournament more interesting.
No, they felt like, oh, like the normal AEW thing last year, like, oh, this is who should win here. There have been times, genuinely, like Daniel losing to Mark Briscoe, which I feel needed to happen. I feel like Mark needed to get off the ground
running
in this tournament.
That's the kind of shit we need to happen in this tournament for it to really elevate those stakes. And I would love it so much if we get just a non-predictable finale. I think that would be
100%.
The best thing possible. And I mean, yeah, it's been another fresh week. You know, the Blue Sky AEW community has been very, very awesome again. Some great memes. There's been a Juice Robinson meme floating around that was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Harkening back to his, I'm fully rested. I got my 8 hours of sleep. You know, sponsor NyQuil Juice Robinson. It is what it is. And yeah, we got just, you know, a little bit of drama we'll touch on this week.
The juice
is
indeed loose.
And I mean, yeah, other than that, I've been playing new video game, Marvel Rivals. That's free everywhere. That's been pretty fun.
Yeah, I've been wanting to toss my phone playing Marvel Snap lately. So, you know.
Just been pretty good. I think it's going to be a fun time to sit and talk some wrestling that we got this week.
Yeah, there, Chieftain. Yeah. Hey, well, I guess with no further ado, I guess we'll get into the beginning of the show here. We'll do some, favorites here. We always like to start off with a little bit of positivity here on this here Podski there, Bodski. So let's get right in here to it. And we'll start at the end, because I guess it's not really the end, but toward the middle of the end. I don't fucking know. We're going to Collision, damn it, because, you know, I'm a Collision fucking meat rider here. So, you know, but, you know. And I think we're both meat riders for both of these men, and I don't care how homoerotic this segment of the podcast sounds. You all know the vibe. It's pro wrestling. Paul Fletcher took on Mr. Kazuchika Okada in the Continental Classic. I put Gold League, but it's a Blue League match, right? I'm fucking tweaking.
Couple of Blue Leaguers.
couple of blue league fellas. Anyway, I don't know why I put gold. You think I'm just tweaking? Because I think maybe, no, I don't know why. Brain. Anyway, doesn't matter. I knew, it's funny. I looked at it and knew that was wrong. So like, at least I knew it was wrong for the thing. And, whatever. So at least I got it right. But yeah, so I'm going to say this about probably every C2 match this week. But I want to say this was a pretty consistently across the board. I don't know if this is something they're trying to actively do to make it like a style of wrestling for the C2 or something. But the chain wrestling sequences that have opened every match this week on the C2 were so smooth, bro. It was insane. Felt like I was watching, especially when these two locked up. My God. I mean, I would imagine Okada probably locked up with this kid in the dojo when he was training at some point, right? I mean, if he thought he was good. Or maybe just when they, I'm sure they crossed paths in a G1 at some point, you know what I mean? Or maybe a tag tournament. But yeah, like,
I definitely had to fucking tie it up at some point, right?
I'm sure. These two, this isn't the first, and it would look too good. And then maybe that's just how good both of them are, and that wouldn't surprise me either, because Kyle's obviously world class. We've learned that. And God, I have a question. If are we able to consider Kyle for a breakout star for this year? Because obviously his whole run has been this year. But he was kind of already a little established before he got to AEW. So how do we play that? Because he was technically, I mean, he was tag champion.
If you want to be technical, you could say it was a breakout single star for him. Because I mean, he did wrestle in last year.
That's fair.
So as a tag team, right? So you know, you got to look at it a couple ways like that. And just because we were very familiar with him doesn't mean everyone was. And I think that's the case for a lot of wrestlers sometimes that do come from Japan.
Because I'll give everybody a little bit of a peek in really quickly to my thought process. I don't even know who I have right now. Actually, I'm not going to say who I have right now because I may keep that. So, but it's definitely become more, it's not definitive now. Before I thought I had it. And honestly, he might have just passed up the guy that I had. Actually, I'll just say it because I think he has. I was going to hold Brian Keith there, but the Jericho people have kind of faded away from the main event of anything. Like, I don't think they're going to be, I think if Jericho makes World's End, which I don't think he will. Or no, wait, has he had a match announced? Anyway, it'll be for that Ring of Honor World title. It won't feature the other guys, you know what I mean? So other than like as like a distraction, it'll probably be like middle of the card, you know what I mean? So I don't suspect that's going to be changing. So Kyle might have just leapfrogged him, you know what I mean? But I do think Brian Keith has been great. So shout out Brian Keith. He could definitely win it if it was a different year, you know what I mean? If Kyle hadn't had this fucking generational run. Speaking of generational, Kyle. Bro, I gotta tell you, this is like, I think, one of the most storytelling matches that we've had so far in this tournament. And I gotta tell you, I think that's gonna be the thing that defines Kyle's run in this tournament, is he is out there. Bro, the physical, I mean, am I gonna sound insane? But you probably are gonna agree with me. Every inch of his body is doing something to fucking communicate something to the audience. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, he's got that wiggle going on.
Well, I don't even know about that. I'm saying, like, when he's, like, physically in the ring, like, the intensity and the anger and the fucking, you know what I mean? Like, you can see his skin is turning red, you know what I mean? Like, fucking, or tan, whatever, you know what it is. Like, you know, like, yeah, like, and it's, like, almost like Okada was, like, offended by this cocky little shit stepping into his ring, you know what I mean? Like, and he let that get to him, and it, like, fucking cost him, you know what I mean? Like, and I fucking like that. I also like that even against fucking Okada, this guy looked dominant on the mat. Charlie, what is going on? Is this guy about to be fucking wrestling Jesus? My God. He's making Okada look bad, you know?
His catalog in AEW is growing and growing fast.
We did have a little bit of a money clip here, but it was actually, I think Okada's actually starting to be smarter with it. Is this the first time we've seen the fucking money clip, bro? Other than against Brian? Like...
The greatest move in all of professional wrestling.
This man was putting it on his wife. This is, you know the deal. He has to do it, you know?
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Dude, this was the best sell on the flapjack I think I've ever seen, with Kyle hopping up in the air like, you know, like, fucking, dude, this is awesome. He's a beautiful drop kick. There was this Everest powerbomb that Kyle Fletcher hit at one point that just fucking absolutely murdered Okada. Dude, the selling on, like, everything in this match. I think Okada actually kind of gets, like... not known. No, I think because he's usually really dominant in a lot of his matches, even the ones where, like, you know, he's even the more competitive ones, he tends to still look a lot. Like, if you look at his New Japan matches, you'll notice that. Like, he'll look like, I'm trying to think of an example, but maybe just him versus his times against, you know, Tanahashi, right? He would just, sometimes Tanahashi would look good and sometimes he wouldn't. You know what I mean? It would just depend on what they're going for in that main event. You know what I mean? And so it's really interesting to see him like in this position now where like he's having to sell for other people in order to get them over because he's already the star now, right? So it's fascinating watching these kind of break down like that, because you know, it's fascinating because I do acknowledge, yes, he tapped him on the nuts and then hit a brain buster and wins. But Kyle Fletcher just beat Kazuchika Okada, Charlie. I don't know how to explain that to people in a way that is, I don't know how to, it's fucking, I mean, this is the biggest win in his career. It's not even close, you know what I mean? Like, I love Will, but beating Okada in the fucking C2 is like, that's career fucking shit right there, you know what I mean? Like, not many people are going to be able to say that, you know? Yeah, I don't know.
Check. There we go.
Welcome back.
All right, cut the recording on my end, but it's still going, it says. So I guess we'll let it sing. It kept going. Yeah, I'm with you. I thought this was a really good match. So the nut tap, right? It caused the desperation. That's the desperation that this match was really seeking for Kyle Fletcher. Okada, tell me if you feel the same watching this match. Did it feel like the crowd wanted to root for him?
Oh, no, that's the other thing that I would say that Kyle did. So the body language thing. I think his body language is selling to the crowd so well that he's a bad guy that even fucking Okada is a babyface against this guy. I think this guy has uncorked a magic fucking bottle, bro. I don't know where he found it. I don't know what Don Callis has been sniffing lately, but I want some.
I think Okada as a babyface might be something we'll see pretty quick then in 2025. Just ride this wave. I mean, really ride the wave of it. Let it roll.
No, he's literally one of the most over babyfaces in wrestling when he's over. Remember when he first came and the fucking coin drops and the babyface run that him and the Bucks were basically on when they were heels, essentially? I mean, let's be honest. Him and the Bucks should probably be babyfaces going into next year anyway, especially if the Death Riders haven't still been defeated by the coalition of, you know, the conglomeration or whatever, which yeah. I don't think they will be. So I think we're probably rolling Death Riders all the way up until Blood and Guts because we want to exploit that, you know what I mean? So. Which I know is far away, but I think the Death Riders are just doing too much business right now, right? Why would you take it on? John Moxley's a fucking phenomenal world champion. And if we give him like a slightly shorter reign than Max, I don't think anyone's going to be complaining about that. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Okada's really looking back to form in this tournament, you could say, right? He feels.
What if Okada, babyface Okada, beats John Moxley at fucking All Out or All In? Come on, man.
Be fucking awesome. I mean, that's the kind of shit you fucking get behind. I love how big of a deal they made it that he beat Okada. It is a big deal, and it should be a big deal. And
that's what I was saying. Beating Okada in the C2, I don't know if you caught that right before your mic came back in. I was saying...
I was able to hear everything. I just don't know why it was...
Okada, I think beating Okada in the C2, like, even if with the ball tapping, this is career... This is, like, the biggest win. This is a career victory. This is going to be talked about for the rest of Kyle's career, beating this guy in this fucking tournament. I mean, on the verge of him becoming the greatest tournament wrestler of all time, too, which means he's probably wrestling at his like highest fucking craziest level he's ever gone to. You know what I mean? So it's like, this is so important for Kyle. I don't think this will be the last win like this that Kyle gets in this tournament because he's going to face Will at some point.
Not at all.
So we could face Will at some point, I guess I should say, because Will's in the other league. But I think at this point, the match kind of needs to happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, even though... Now that we have that stipulation set in for World's End, he could definitely face him at World's End still, no matter what. All right. Other than that, I think the only thing I said that probably didn't pick up then was I made a joke about the money clip. But, yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. I think that was the last thing I heard was you. You said, like...
I fucking did it then. I think I might have caught it pretty quickly. I thought I was going to... All right. Anyways.
Yeah, I think we're good.
My favorite, where we are also doing a Continental Classic match. No surprise there. And we're jumping to Rampage. And safe to say... Perhaps the most loaded Rampage of the year, I think, safe to say.
Maybe all time.
Yeah, we had Ricochet versus Commander in a Gold League Continental Classic match. Okay. Commander in this tournament, as a replacement for Juice, has excelled in every single aspect. I think this is so much better than forfeiting. I am so glad he's getting this opportunity to really show who he is. And Commander is one of those wrestlers where because of how like fantastical he is in the ring, taking that L, it doesn't hurt him. And just being competitive with Ricochet is very, very good. I thought these guys really, really started letting it sing. I mean, you're talking the high-flying ropes, right? The rope work that they were... just throwing together super high intensity offense. Ricochet wants this, right? You could feel it in his presence. He wants this. He wants to be the guy to go to World's End. and win this title. I thought this was just showing off more, again, how great of a year Ricochet's having on television. He showed up in August, and he's now been picked 8 times for our favorite. I mean, come on, man. Like, that's the quality he's putting on week to week, and I think that's important to note.
I love seeing that, because that was, like, how we described if Ricochet comes to AEW, this is what's going to be. And we've had guys we've described like that before. I think the only other one that really lived up to that, like, we really thought, Adam Copeland.
Yeah.
And so much more than we could have ever imagined with him, right? To the point where he got hurt, you know what I mean? I mean, he got so goddamn hard, he got hurt.
That's why I was very passionate when we would bring up those comments of people saying, oh, Ricochet's just going to be another guy in AEW. It's like, I don't think so, man. Because Ricochet, before AEW existed, he stood out. And he knows how to stand out. And I think there's a generation of fans that hasn't really seen him at his true potential, other than,
you know what's funny, too?
The big moments with Logan Paul or at WrestleMania, like with Braun Strowman, like little moments like that, they don't know how great he is.
I think a lot of people just assume when they hear someone talk the way he was, that it was just because he was really angry at WWE. And I think he was. But I think it was different, because I've heard the people that were just angry with WWE, right? We know, we can name a few people, we don't have to, but there have been a few people that just came over, and clearly they didn't really have any other intention other than just wrestling still, but not really. It wasn't a big vendetta about their career that they really actually cared about. Ricochet knows what he could be. He's always probably known that. But clearly he's a really humble guy, because he let them just job him out for years, you know what I mean? I think maybe I just bought into the hype, but I believed him when he said, I know I'm actually going to fucking do this thing. Because that's what he would say in every interview leading up to his release. You know what I mean? It's like, nope, if I go to AEW, this is what I'm going to do. You know what I mean? I don't know. I guess I shouldn't say leading up to this, like post-release before he came to AEW. You know what I mean? When he would do content. I think WWE fans just kind of stop being butthurt when they lose somebody. Like, it sucks, but Triple H is going to miss sometimes, you know? Like, Triple H knows the value this guy brings. He put him as one of his top stars in NXT. So the fact that he never got there tells me that he just thought this guy was locked up. And maybe that pissed Ricochet off. They thought that I had just had him locked up because of the relationship they had from NXT. It's like, no, dude, you got to do something for me now. You might call him selfish for that. This ain't a business about friends. This is not show friends. It's show business. It's what people always like CM Punk like to always say, right? You know?
Yeah, at one point, Commander countered the superplex and hit a springboard hurricanrana for a near fall, and I actually leaped out of my fucking chair. Yeah, just a real... This match was an absolute blast, and I think... I'll say this. I hope maybe people that were skeptical about Commander being added, maybe this can almost be a sign... prove to them, like, hey, this guy, given opportunities, you know, 12-13 minute match, he knows how to go out there and put on a show for the crowd, because the crowd really started to get behind it.
I hope.
Actually, as much as the crowd was so behind the underdog and Commander, Ricochet kind of had to play the heel a little bit and start to ground him, and I think that worked to his advantage.
Ricochet's been flirting with turning heel for, like, the entire time he's been here, pretty much. I would even argue he was the heel in his feud with Will. Yeah. I think that's pretty fair to say, right? Maybe not fully. He still had some aspects to him that were, like, understandable, so he's probably more tweener in that respect. But he was clearly very selfish about his history with Will, you know, believing it was all him and not, you know, like, that was the whole story they told there or whatever. I'm interested in, like, I will say this about the Commander thing. It sucks because, like, I hope for, like, the general AEW audience that doesn't necessarily, maybe they see Commander and they know him, but they don't see him all the time, because we've talked about before, he's kind of a very start stop luchador in AEW. There's, like, a couple of them like that, and fortunately for him, he's the one that they've decided to keep bringing back, obviously, so that's good sign for him, obviously. But at the same time, I do fear that the main audience isn't really as familiar with him. This tournament will help with that for sure.
Yes.
But I do think that the people that were, like, anti-Commander, that were like, why is this guy getting into the tournament? I mean, you're never going to be able to please those people, unfortunately. They're just going to come up with a reason why everything is bad and never going to accept. And if you actually come up with a reasonable, well-thought-out explanation, they're just going to, like, come up with 10 reasons why, you know, that's actually incorrect and why they know wrestling 10 times better than you. So, you know, like, it's... You know, I don't bother with those people. I am interested to see what the general react. I bet Commander is super duper over with the general AEW crowd after this, if he's not already, you know?
He's had a hell of, like, 4 months now, so he's really rolling. All right, we got a little bit of news. So Bryan Danielson said he will be in the building for All In 2025. He doesn't know what it's going to look like, though. I don't know if I'll be able to wrestle at that point.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll be able to wrestle again, to be quite honest. But there's one thing I can tell you for certain. I will be here. There's nothing you can do to make me miss this.
Yeah, so we all suspected, A, that he was going to continue to have a role backstage in AEW. He probably still has been, let's be honest. I doubt he's never been there. He's probably been mostly at home recovering from surgery, right? But, which, did we ever confirm whether he actually got the surgery or not? I'm not sure. But
I got nothing in here about it, so I'm not sure.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe they found out he didn't need it. Maybe the whole thing was if he stopped, and when he stopped, he wouldn't have to actually get neck surgery or something like that. Maybe that, because I could see Brian, let's be honest, Brian Danielson, I don't know that he does wrestling math, but if there was a person that could math out their wrestling, you know, because he knows how his body is, right? Probably wrestlers know how much time they have left before they're going to be, you know, and then they have doctors they're talking to, and obviously this guy's very conscious of his health because of how hard it was for him to come back, you know what I mean? So, but anyway, first of all, I gotta say, really excited that he's gonna be at All In, even if he's just gonna be like, you know, on the pre-show. Of course, he'll probably be on commentary if he's on anything, right? You know what I mean? Probably for a big match with either Will or Nigel or somebody like that in it, because I do think Nigel will wrestle at All In. I think that's gonna happen. That may happen every year, honestly, because Nigel can still wrestle, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And he might as well, if he can. I think he's had expressed interest in wrestling Lee, right? So maybe he'll be on commentary for that match. Just an idea, you know what I mean? But anyway, if he can wrestle, he will. We know that, 100%. Maybe it'll be Nigel, right? That'd be cool. You know, like on a big stage with some time, you know what I mean? The Dynamite match was awesome, but I think all made us want the match again, right? But that being said, if he's not doing commentary and he's not in a match, what would you want him to do on the show? Would you want him to just like... Could he be the All-In host? Could we do a WrestleMania host type thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, as long as he's backstage, I'm hoping kind of help direct the show in terms of, you know, maybe help him, you know, do whatever he's going to do with the actual show. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing him talking beforehand about the importance of the matches, because that's something he does great.
I'm going to throw something at you. Should we never see him within the bounds of the wrestling show because his character should remain dead, technically? I mean, it's okay if we see him, like, talking about stuff.
No, I wouldn't say never, but I do think they'll at least acknowledge something if he does pop up like that. You know, seeing him at this All-In press event, everyone that's watching that or that cares about it knows the deal, you know? But in terms of the television, yeah, it doesn't hurt, maybe. Look, I'm okay. If we don't see him on screen for a long time, I don't mind. I just want to know that he's there.
And part of releasing this press is probably testing the waters to see how soon they can bring him back. You know what I mean? Like,
could be.
Because he probably does want to come back. I mean, let's be honest. I don't think the guy's just like, oh, I'm done. Like, he's going to be involved. It's just whether or not they can bring him back sooner rather than later. I honestly think if they want to do it, just bring him back backstage. Have him start doing that. No one's going to be against that. And I don't think he should be prevented from doing that unless he just doesn't want to be right now so he can be with his family. You know what I mean? So... either way, yeah, good stuff.
StarCast is going to be returning as part of AEW All In Texas Week. I'm sure a lot of people that are going to the show, that's probably cool for them.
With some good interviews, so some controversial shit probably coming out of it, you know?
Yeah, it's been there since the original All In, so good stuff. Big Bill and Lexi Nair tied the knot. They are married. Congrats to them. That's awesome. Good for them.
She got a large Willie in her life.
Large William.
How Lexi Nair likes it. That's all I'm going to say, you know?
Hell yeah. Big Boom AJ gave us an update. He said the cast will be off in about 2 weeks. I'll be back in the ring about 4 weeks after that. We'll see everyone up at the Hammerstein Ballroom. We're going to be heading up there after that. A few more shows along the way. And then, yes, absolutely, Texas, AJ, Big Justice, we will be here at All In. And we're coming to bring the boom! So
yeah, at the press conference post the show, they basically signed Big Boom AJ. I assume he was already under contract before then. They probably, like, you know, saw, like, he was like, yeah, I'm sure Tony Khan was like, I want to see what you actually look like. And then was like, oh shit, you can wrestle? All right, you can wrestle? Fuck, all right, you're... So I think actually Big Boom AJ is genuinely an AEW signee at this point. We haven't gotten the official word.
The spot he can easily fill.
QT Marshall?
Zach Clayton. Yeah, I think the spot and the plans that they had for Zach Clayton, he just didn't have the reach that someone like Big Boom AJ has. But they had plans for it. I mean, they had him featured on the Jersey Shore thing, right? And they were playing into that when they were trying to do the hook thing. But I think Big Boom AJ just has a little bit more of a reach to a demographic AEW is looking for, is my guess. So, yeah, I think this is kind of exactly what we thought it'd be. They talked about the video games. He said... they're still pumping the current one, that Fight Forever, but they do have plans. They want to make an impact in the video game industry. which is something AEW said since the jump. But then they're keeping life support on this current game. They're still adding to it. Never tried it myself. Really never had any interest.
Not the funnest wrestling game I've ever played.
Yeah. They provided a status update on Rush and Realistico. He said they've been absent due to at home with family matters. That's kind of all they said. So, yeah, I think that was what they said.
I don't want to be political, but are we going to have like a 6-month period on this podcast where like the non-American wrestlers are like up in the air whether they can wrestle because of like immigration shit in this country? Because I feel like that might be a thing. Like,
well, if certain things pass through like the last time, there could be scenarios where they need to update their visas or they need to do this and that. But
so we could lose guys like Will, guys like
even
Hawk, guys like
last year, like
Kinosuke, you know, and we're Okada, all because of this bullshit. Not lose them like for like months. I mean, who was it that we had? We didn't have Pac for like half a year or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, because it's still really, really hard to renew your visa for America. And we see that we ran into that problem really bad with someone mid-push. Most of the CMLL guys last year, they couldn't come over at one point. And then, God, who was it? Was it Bandito? Someone was literally left out to fucking dry. Like, they couldn't do anything for, like, 3 months because of this. And then a Japanese wrestler, I think it was Riho, this year. So, yeah, I mean, it's always going to be a thing. It might tune up a notch. Who knows? It tuned up a notch, you know, 8 years ago, but AEW wasn't out then. So, I don't know, but I guess we'll have to see how that all plays out. And then, you know, there was some drama this week. And I think this one, a lot of times if it's TMZ-based, you know, we skip it. But I think this one, it was important to talk about because we've been covering this. So Penta is officially a free agent now. Again, good luck to him. But Rey Fénix is not. And that's been the talk of the town. Let's put all the information out there, right? So Rey Fénix responded to a post and said, so far, the most accurate comment. And what that post said, it was by Chris Featherstone. He said, I received information from an AEW source on November 20th regarding the Lucha Brothers status, but did not report it as I was waiting for one of them to begin speaking their mind about the situation. He put in parentheses, I was told that was coming. I was also told that day that Penta's contract was ending with AEW. Rey Fénix did just that. Spoke his mind. So here is some intel I received. The alleged excuse that Tony Khan found out about Lucha Brothers being in talks with WWE is fake news, and the real reason will be revealed. There is a real story behind the situation with Rey Fénix, which is a huge injustice. Expect the Lucha Brothers to go more in depth about their time in AEW when they are free and clear to do so. And when they do, it is going to be ugly. And that's what Rey Fénix said so far as the most accurate comment. He said, unfortunately, due to my contractual issues, I cannot speak now, but I will have my time. About a couple hours later in that same day, he advertised that he is wrestling for Hog Wrestling, which is what, House of Glory, I believe. So Rey Fénix is working that show, just like, I believe, Ricky Starks. They also pulled Willie Mack from a GCW show. I don't know if that was injury or, again, AEW and GCW. A lot's been in the news lately about all of that. And then Rey Fénix also said his treatment. He said, no one stays in a place where they received inhumane treatment. He said, I needed a doctor and you ignored me for months. So that is kind of all the information that is out there that we have right now. And yeah, I mean, clearly, Duke, I think it's safe to say Rey Fénix is not happy about this.
I mean, would you be? I mean,
I would absolutely not be happy. I would be fucking annoyed. I would be, you know, if I was in Rey Fénix's shoes and, you know, I am wrestling still at a level that most people in the world can't wrestle at. And I just want to leave, but they added time to my contract because I got injured, which is, as far as we know, I believe Rey Fénix is the first example of that in AEW. As far as I can remember, I believe this is the first example. So if I was
in Rey Fénix, I mean, unless you believe the CM Punk interview with, but I think he said that in the Helwani interview, right? Like, I mean, so which, I mean, again,
could they maybe have added more time if they had wanted to, but they just fucking fired him. So
yeah,
worked out well for him anyways.
Yeah.
If that would have been a scenario.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it would, if there, and I, again, I'm not going to be the rumor mill person. That's not what we do on this show, but I do think the only parallel I could see in those two situations would have to be, there'd have to be a situation where Rey Fénix was unhappy already, perhaps. And maybe it got to the point where, like with CM Punk, like, I don't know, maybe Tony Khan just has a point in his brain where when it gets so like toxic, he just doesn't want to deal with it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he could feel burned, because 12 months ago, Andrade was wrestling on pay-per-view and everyone knew he was leaving in a couple weeks. And they shook his hand on the way out. They did business and everything was fine. And
Ethan Page asked for his release. See, the thing I will say, and this is something that you brought up to me in our offline conversation, which is that Ethan Page asked for his release as like a professional and was granted it. You know what I mean? Yep. And I'm not saying that Rey Fénix hasn't done the same thing. Maybe it's a different situation. Maybe because Rey Fénix and Ethan Page are not really comparable, right? But like, at least not currently comparable, right? You know what I mean? Like, with Rey the Fénix level of success. Rey Fénix held
3 championships in this company.
Right. Right, right. Ethan Page was on the brink of winning championships multiple times. It never landed, you know what I mean? So, in the way that we probably would have wanted it to, right? But anyway, yeah, so I mean, like, I feel really bad for Rey Fénix if he couldn't get a doctor, obviously. And if that's something AEW is doing, like, obviously that's a problem that needs to be fixed, because this is exactly the kind of issues that WWE had that AEW was allegedly supposed to be, you know, there to fix, you know?
Yep.
Like, so if AEW is going right back to the same old bullshit with certain people because of one reason or another, because they don't like them all of a sudden or something, then I really don't like that, you know? And so it's just it's a really shitty situation. I expect this won't be the last we hear of it.
And there definitely needs to be more information out there.
Yes. Just like right the now, CM Punk thing. We're getting
stuff from one side.
Correct. Which is how the CM Punk situation was for a long time. You know what I mean?
And I think a lot of the stuff is going to stem from them being bitter with the whole CMLL and AAA thing. I mean, remember, they were kept off of wrestling cards. So was Andrade. And they all tried to get that fixed. And there was a lot of, you know, we covered it at the time. There's a lot of Mexican politics playing into that. It's a very political landscape in wrestling. And that's just the way it's always been in Mexico. And it is here, too. I mean, look at AEW and WWE, right? You have all-out fucking vulture wars online.
Like, so knock it back to the 50s and 60s, the territories were completely political. It was an entire politics game you had to play. And, you know,
I think a lot of this is what my guess is. My best guess is a lot of this stuff that they feel very maybe betrayed, maybe, you know, whatever about is has to come back to that. And maybe that's where it started getting ugly. But again, I don't know. I mean, they haven't wrestled in 5 months. When they wrestled their last match, I mean, Rey Fénix hasn't lost. Last time he lost was to Jay White in the quarterfinal of the Owen Hart tournament. And then they kept winning. It sounded like they were on their way post-SummerSlam. Time got added. Now they've been treated inhumane. And I want to give the talent the benefit of the doubt. But when you say you're treated inhumane, I can't help but roll my eyes a little bit, because you're still getting paid millions. Like, I just, man, I, stuff like that.
My question is this, like, is what was the actual issue? Was it an issue where like the AEW insurance plan isn't like one where he can just go out of, you know, a network and get a doctor? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Does he have to get with Tony Khan's people and get a doctor that AEW's, you know, hired or something like that? I don't know.
Because I want to say maybe it was something to do with Mexico, but remember Bandido publicly was thanking Tony Khan for helping him getting his wrist, all that wrist surgery done. Because remember, he had wrist surgery and then the surgery got fucked up, so he had to get it redone.
Yeah.
And Bandido was publicly thanking Tony Khan. So again, maybe he got it in the States, maybe it's a Mexico thing. I have no idea.
But it could be because I don't know if that's probably more difficult for them to just get like their healthcare plan to just apply to a non-American citizen, yeah. I'm sure. But like, I'm sure there are still exceptions to that rule.
I don't know. I really
actually don't know if Rey Fénix is even from Mexico, to be honest with you.
As I'm assuming far as he is. I know, Penta's name is still not public. Like, still no one knows who that guy is.
I mean, how do you provide fucking healthcare for a guy you don't actually know who his identity is? You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
and Fénix is his brother. I mean, look, they're born in Mexico. I'm assuming they're still there, but it's not public information. So at that point, it's just speculation.
But I'm pretty sure you can, like, in situations sometimes go to, like, somewhere else, and it might just be really expensive for them. So maybe that's what they're thinking. Maybe they needed help, and they didn't have the financial ability to just go and get, like, I don't know. But and maybe we'll never know fully, because, like, we never really fully know what happened with CM Punk, right? And we never will, because now it's sealed with legal shit, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, like, maybe that'll be the same thing that happens here. Maybe it's for the best. I can tell you this, if this blows up like the All Outs, the Brawl Out stuff did, it's not going to be good, because thankfully we just got the TV deal, but it's just such a bad look. You know what I mean? Like,
I know, and it's used as a dog pile scenario, and now everyone's, you know, I told you. And I was kind of hoping this would go the way of the Jake Hager communist comments, and just no one would talk about it, but it's the talk of the town, and I think it's because everyone likes the Lucha Bros, and, you know, I don't think anyone's a fan of contracts getting extended due to injury. Like, as a business, that I totally get it, but no one's a fan of it. And it just sucks, because I feel like, and again, maybe I'm looking at this differently, but Andrade was so publicly thanking everyone and thanking Tony Khan, and he went about his way, and, you know, it feels like everyone else just can't do that. They have to just turn around and light fire, and maybe it's, I don't know. Anyways, it's a shitty situation. I hope it all gets itself worked out. Let's jump into Dynamite here. We were live from unless you had any other comments you wanted to add, I want to let that be fully fleshed
out. I mean,
out.
I guess the last thing that to really say about the situation is, like I said, I feel fucking really bad for Ray Phoenix for not being able to get his medical assistance that he needed. I'm sure he's fully in support of the CEO guy, you know, not the CEO guy, but the guy that did the thing, you know, at the very same time, I think this situation could have been handled more professionally, you know, on both sides.
I can't believe they didn't lock this down behind closed doors, man. It just sucks.
To be honest with you, you're gonna dislike me for saying it a little bit, but it's not surprising to me whatsoever, given the way things have been handled in the past, to be honest with you. So, you know, like, I thought we were past this, but it clearly, you know, I'm not the only one, because even through all the bullshit, they extended the deal. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm more concerned about than anything, is that I would suspect that the people at HBO were like, oh, well, it's been a solid 2 years since anything really like that happened. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Jack Perry happened a little bit after that, but, you know, Jack Perry's Jack Perry, whatever. Rich gets gonna rich, right? You know, they all probably have kids like that. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, you know, and they thought maybe all that was gone when CM Punk left. Clearly that's not the case, so it bothers me, because I wonder how much else is going. That's where I start to think, Charlie, and that's how the dog pile starts, because then you start to think, okay, what else is going on that we don't know about? You know what I mean? Like,
hey, Kenny Omega said he wouldn't have hired 90% of the people here. I don't think Ray Phoenix is one of those, but it fucking sucks that even an AEW original as Ray Phoenix, one of the first fucking people, you know, when the Lucha Brothers were announced, that was like, shit, they're coming to national television. And I've enjoyed their run, but now when you publicly do this shit, it just fucking sucks.
I think a lot of people are like thinking, oh, Ray Phoenix and Penta, they'll just go straight to the WWE. And I mean, I guess if they want to make that money, they probably could.
I mean, I
don't know if these guys need
to
do that.
Singles run, or is he just, it sounds like he's already wrestling back in AAA. So
that's what I was going to say. He himself, I know for a fact, he's one of the most over wrestlers in AAA. He's been their world champion multiple times in the last few years, I'm pretty sure, or at least the top champion there multiple times. He could just go wrestle in AAA and then maybe even like work out some situation where he could wrestle in CMLL or something else like that. You know what I mean? Maybe not now because of the whole AEW thing, but maybe, you know, like, but certainly he could wrestle on Mexican wrestling and probably make as much, if not more money than what he's going to make for being on television. Maybe not as much per, like, you know, like, check or something, but, like, he probably can make good money just wrestling the Mexican indies at this point for how big he is, right? And I would assume Phoenix is the same way, so who's to say these guys just don't go back to Mexico and just live there and then just figure out their healthcare situation some way, you know what I mean? But, like, I mean, but maybe that's why they go to WWE, because, I mean, if you go to WWE, you know you're going to be taken care of no matter what, you know what I mean? So, at least at this point, so I don't know, but, you know, either way.
Grass is always greener. That's the way everyone fucking sees wrestling. We'll see. We'll to see what happens. And yeah, hopefully it's the last
time. The grass is always greener, especially if I'm the one smoking it. All right.
Amen. Let's jump into Dynamite. The really good video package opening the week. They announced Juice Robinson suffered a broken fibula and he's been replaced by Commander.
That's nice.
I fucking do too. Kyle Fletcher takes on and defeats Shelton Benjamin in the Continental Classic Blue League. This was a slower start, and the crowd was so behind Shelton Benjamin. Kyle Fletcher doing a great job getting booed, and, you know, it's really cool to see how behind the crowd is for Shelton Benjamin. He was beating the shit out of him in terms of just his showing off his power. There was a massive lariat he hit for a two count that was beautiful. They got their forearm exchanges.
So Kyle hit the ultra rope-a-dope and then hit the fucking digital dash. It was crazy.
Yeah. Kyle hit a Michinoku driver that I was like, holy shit. Yeah, the sunset flip floated over with a schoolboy, grabbed the ropes, got the leverage pin, and quite literally, when you do that, you did steal the victory. So Kyle Fletcher and Don Callis build up the ramp. They're celebrating. Really good, strong opener to Dynamite, and that's the story of the Continental Classic so far, is we are getting high-quality openings to our wrestling programming, and I love that so much. Any thoughts on this other Kyle match this week? And Shelton Benjamin, he hasn't missed yet in AEW. I am loving everything.
Yeah, just I wrote down, this is kind of, and this is, when I saw how this went, I knew exactly how Kyle's run is probably going to be shaping up to go in this tournament, I think. Now, I mean, I don't know for sure, but at least, like, going forward, like, for the next few matches, at least, right? And I wrote this down, this is a litmus test for his, where he's at in his career at this point, and how this meteoric rise he's been on this year, how seriously are they taking it? This is a big match for that, because Shelton could just beat him here, and then he has to figure that out, you know what I mean? Nope. This guy might go on, he might have like the best tournament run we've ever seen in AEW at this point. I mean, this is huge. I mean, this is a guy that's probably not going to lose too many matches in this tournament if he loses, you know, that aren't to like, you know, I could see like people tying with Shelton more than actually beating him in this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is somebody who needs to pick up these wins. And I feel like it was, you know, it wasn't anything crazy, but I mean, not everything in the C2 is. So, you know.
We get a highlights package from Collision last week, showing off the time limit draw on the Ospreay match. Hook makes his way to the ring, mic in hand, calls out Nick Wayne. He challenged him to that match at the ballroom. Hook said he wants Cage at the show, instead he wants to fight Wayne tonight. Patriarchy's music hits, they all come out. Hook fights him off, Mother Wayne ran distraction. Christian pops Hook with the world title briefcase thing, and a 3-on-1 beatdown. Patriarchy stands tall. Concerto to the head, to the hand, actually, not the head. And yeah.
To the hand. Yeah, I mean, it should
I'm
be fine.
This little thing. It's fine.
Yeah. Yep.
Still would like to see if they could bring in AR Fox in some aspect, because they kind of tease that. And
Dude, that guy must, like, owe somebody money, bro. I don't fucking understand what happens with him.
Yeah, talk about someone that gets to stop and start. He'll show up, be involved in a week, 2 week program, and,
there's like three people right now that he could actively have a storyline with that would all make sense. And all of them would be Adam Page, right? To get to Swerve, right? Swerve, right? Because obviously there's history there with the Dante Fox, you know, kill shot match. And Nick Wayne, who he attacked at his home.
Yeah.
And none of them are happening. And it's been like 2 years
almost.
His
motivation for hating Swerve should push him to want to join the Hurt Syndicate.
And I thought that was the path, but then I realized, like, a week after thinking that, it's like, oh, wait, he's not a big enough name to be their last guy, though. He's too old, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, what else do we have? Renee was backstage. She approached Mercedes. Says she doesn't care about Camille anymore. Wants to talk about AJ Sticker.
Renee's not making accusations, bro. What the fuck?
She'll be watching her match with Penelope tonight. She nice and easy. I love this next thing here. MVP was just letting Shelton Benjamin hear it for even allowing Fletcher to stay in that match. He was just berating him. He told Benjamin he loves him, but he's disappointed in the showing. And Lashley and MVP, they go to walk away. Benjamin attacks a production assistant. And they return to join in. MVP's yelled, this is what they do. I love this segment. The Hurt Syndicate has been really, really high-quality AEW programming.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how they were going to be because I didn't see what this was. I've heard everybody talk about how great they were, but then I also heard them talk about how they just kind of got misused a bunch after they first got introduced and kind of left a bad taste in some people's mouth, you know what I mean? Like, even though they liked them in the group. So I'm just really glad they're actually getting a chance to do what they want to do with it because, I mean, it's making for really great television, especially when you throw them into a situation. And it's always, you never know when you throw members of a faction and make the story that they're telling, you know, a tournament. But this actually makes a lot of sense, and I'm down with it. I'll watch
Shelton beat the shit out of people. I like MVP getting upset at him for losing.
Yeah, it feels real.
That's good. We have the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal. I gotta be honest right here, right away. This
now, the best part of this match, I'm gonna tell you right now, is when Evil Uno hit the...
This is the least memorable Battle Royale I think I've ever seen in AEW. This was not good.
I don't even think they understand this match at this point, because I feel like on freaking Collision, they were saying Max was going to be in this match, because they didn't know he wasn't going to be in this match.
Best part about this match, and it's the most heartbreaking part, was Action Andretti and Leo Rush rocking matching gear, and they bonked off Top Flight. But I liked what they set up on Collision. I hope.
Now, if that goes good, that could be good.
I hope it's one of those things you smash rocks together and they fucking realize that they need each other. And, yeah.
When they do what now?
Yeah. So, you know.
We're smashing rocks? Ah, shit.
With the Bang Bang Gang and how they didn't do the Freebird rule, I acknowledge that AEW doesn't want the Freebird rule to exist. Man, I think it would be so... Even how they were saying in the promo, like, oh, yeah, four of us together, like, going for gold. But anyways, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly won. Who cares?
Yeah.
A vignette is shown with Julia Hart having a bullseye in Jamie Hayter and her comeback. It says it's time for her return and Hayter should watch her back. The house always wins. This is going to be good. This makes so much sense. She wants her return to be better than hers. I mean, little things like that. She feels like she got stepped in front of, and what better way to show it off than throwing you out there with the big dog and Jamie Hayter. So can't go wrong with that.
It sucks for Julia because, I mean, do we think Julia's probably going to lose her first match back? That sucks. You know, like,
maybe. She might win, though.
Maybe. I don't know if I want to see Jamie losing right now, though. Like, whatever.
Look, as long as it's a good program, I don't care. She can take some L's.
You know what? Here's how you can kind of cheese it. And I know some Julia Hart fans will be upset about this. Just have, you know, Brody will come out and cheese for her sometimes. Maybe he loses a match in the tournament. He's mad. There you go. Yeah.
We go backstage with a really awkward acclaimed promo.
Awkward, but the stuff that we needed from this, which was the Bowen stuff, I think Bowen's was perfect in this.
It was, and I think so was Daddy Ass. I would like to think that if this team does go the separate ways soon, maybe Daddy Ass still sticks with Bowen's as a manager, because I think that connection, people still really like it.
Everything that he does now, just minus the rap, and then you just can maybe have new entrance music, you know what I mean, where you do a similar thing.
Oh yeah, Anthony Bowens needs he needs his own song. Maybe people just want to get away from it entirely and have him do his own thing, which I'm fine with.
I'd be fine with him doing it. He could come up with something similar, and he could still say Scissor Me Daddy Ass. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be an acclaimed thing, you know what I mean? Like,
could easily have it in a song if they wanted or something, right? All right, Swerve beats the living fuck out of Max Caster. This was over instantly. Caster got off one springboard attack, but Swerve popped up, fired off three house calls. Dominating victory. He held up, opted for a Swerve stomp for good measure post-match, told the camera not to waste his time. There's still a little left of 2024. He and Lashley have unfinished business.
I'm fine with them wrestling again at World's End. I didn't have a plan in my head for Bobby for that pay-per-view, so in my head he was just not going to be on it unless they had like a last-minute like throw him into like a Fatal 4-Way or something type deal. You know, which they could easily do. Bobby's very good at that, you know what I mean? But him facing Swerve, probably the winner of that, especially if it ends up being Bobby back-to-back, should go for the world title, you know what I mean? Even if it's just a one-off match. I just think that, again, Swerve is too high up on the card if he wins against somebody like Bobby after losing to him, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's set up for... Yeah. Actually, if he beats Bobby, I mean, that's probably sets up a rubber match, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and then we just go straight through the Revolution, and then the winner of that probably goes. Yeah, then the winner of that probably is the next World Championship contender, you'd think.
Yeah, maybe Grand Slam. No, we're forgetting Grand Slam. Grand Slam is before Revolution this year.
Okay. I'm just saying that wherever the next World title shot is, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be for the pay per view. The pay per view could be the other person, even. You know what I mean? Depending. You know what I mean? Which I think in this scenario in my head, I'm thinking it would be Bobby Swerve Bobby. That way Bobby's the contender, because I feel like even though he's going to lose to John, there's going to be a lot of cheese involved, so that's not going to hurt the Hurt Syndicate, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know if that's going to be a match they have to do right away. They may hold Bobby from the world title scene for a while if they don't think that it's the right time to put him in, but I do think he's going to end up in there sooner rather than later, you know what I mean? He probably will be world champion at some point in the next couple of years, you know, I would think.
Switchblade. Yeah. I could see it.
Yeah.
We jump
assuming that guy doesn't win it or something, because he could.
Oh, yeah. Jay White taking on a defeating Pac. As soon as they ring the bell, Yuta tried to jump in and cause a distraction right away. White had it scouted. Yeah, this was fast. It got the action rolling instantly. I thought these guys, so first ever singles match between the two of them, I thought they delivered big time. I love these two just as wrestlers. We get the big return of Orange Cassidy. Death Riders finally felt like they had the odds even against them. The crowd was popping big for Hangman, Switchblade, Cassidy standing tall to end the segment. Christian, you know, showed up. They're doing all that. We'll see where it goes, what it happens from here. Marina, you know, she had a face-off with White. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure where it's going. Could be a 5-way, could be a 4-way, could be 3-way, 2-1-way. I don't know. You name it.
A 30-man AEW World Championship over the top battle royale. I'm down.
Yes. I mean, honestly, if we had Blood and Guts coming up or something, this feels like the perfect example for it.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's why John's going to hold it through Blood and Guts, or maybe up until Blood and Guts.
This thing off of him.
I think because otherwise, why do you have anybody coming after him?
You're not wrong.
I don't know who else you're going to set up between now and Blood and Guts to fucking be the big bad, unless the Hurt Syndicate literally like rob everybody of everything, which could happen. But
yeah. I mean, we'll get into it a little more with Collision, but I am really losing faith weekly right now with his title reign.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, again, this was another segment that just felt so overcooked post-match.
No, I'll give you that. There's so much going on.
So overcooked. But the crowd, they're rooting for Orange, so I don't know what they're going to do here.
Did we miss on not putting it on Orange? I don't know.
I think they might have to enter a scenario where they run Orange back if that's the case, but I don't know. I don't know what their endgame is with this Moxley thing. And of course, I'm always open to seeing what it is. It's just the week to week right now. It's running, you know, it's feeling a little bit repetitive. And we'll get into it. Jamie Hayter backstage saying Julie Hart's mind games doesn't work for her. She's more of a face to face or fist to face kind of girl, kind of gal. Yo.
Hey.
By the way, I love this kind of gear / outfit that Jamie's rocking. She sticks out. She looks really cool. So. She goes on to say, everyone and their mothers were pissed about her return at Wembley. Doesn't know why Hart cares. She came back to right wrongs and settle scores, something Julia Hart has nothing to do with. I like this angle from Jamie. She's like, dude, what do you want?
Time for the spooky mind game bullshit. I'm with her. I mean, no offense to Julia. I mean, obviously I want Julia to feature, but you know, I'm just saying, like, I'm with, I'm with Julia here, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm sorry, with Jamie here. Julia.
She said the international.
I did an instant betrayal, shit.
Yeah, it means a lot to her. She's determined to take it all the way. You can't fight what you can't see. So when Hart decides to make her come back, the last thing she'll see is looking up at Jamie. Fucking hate that. Oh, we get the New York Minute with the King of New York. I am the learning tree. He plugs Ring of Honor Battle Royale. Final battle. Yada, yada, yada. He keeps mispronouncing it Hammerstein.
Hammerstein.
So a vignette is shown of two.
I actually think it is Hammerstein. I think it is.
Yeah, he keeps going, Stein. Vignette is showing two cowboys talking about someone returning soon, saying as soon as the outlaw returns, everyone is in trouble. One of them puts up a wanted sign showing that the man they're talking about is...
All right.
Fuck yeah, motherfucker!
So you intimated to me the idea of him joining the Jericho faction offline, right? Hear me out. He joins the learning tree, Bad Apple Brian Keith and him become tag team champions.
The Bounty Hunter, the Outlaw, and all you're missing is the Cowboy. Hangman, Brian Keith, Bandito, greatest trio ever, the Outlaws, I don't give a... Book it. Anna Jay takes on and defeats Penelope Ford. She's on her quest for the TBS Championship. Yeah, I thought this was pretty solid. They talked about how they had their matches at Daly's Place, the bloody tag feud that they went down, which was fucking fantastic. Long live the bunny. Yeah, she just
Who
kicked her ass
the
pretty
bunny?
Much. She beat the living shit out of her, and this was pretty quick. Gory bomb for the victory. Took the mic, called out Mercedes, who quickly obliged. She said if Statlander, the biggest and baddest, can't beat her for the TBS title, what makes Jay think she can? She said Mariah May must have kicked her a little too hard in the head. But she admires the confidence. Jay should come back in 10 years when she's done something in this business first. Anna slaps her, looks at her watch, saying it'll be on her time. And we get told in 2 weeks it'll be Monet versus Jay for the TBS title.
I am so glad that Anna Jay is not just being thrown out to dry. Like, she deserves to still be in the scene, and I'm very glad that she's getting another opportunity. And you know what, dude? I have not had thought, we've thought for a while that this person could beat Mercedes Epper. This is someone who actually genuinely could beat Mercedes, and Mercedes walks in with just the New Japan title to Wrestle Dynasty. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's a real possibility. But it's also possible that it doesn't happen.
If we're running the Mina match this early, I do think Mercedes might be going after the world title then a little bit quicker.
Yeah, she could go for it. Fuck. I mean, is there time to get her in for World's End if she loses it in 2 weeks? Like, no, anyway, she'd have to lose the other title,
I mean,
too,
honestly,
right?
Yeah. I think, depending on what happens with Toni Storm, right? Because that's Australia. I think we're still safe to assume Toni Storm's wrestling for the title there. We just got to see where the card lines up. I mean, Mariah May, still, I'm still saying it, best title reign ongoing in the company right now. So, you know, I think maybe Mercedes going for that could be the best outcome. Or maybe they still want her to hold this one. You know, we just got to wait and see. So, speaking of that, Renee is seated backstage with Mariah, who cut Paquette off for not having her friends, just poking holes at people who do. She said, giving a title shot to her best friend is a great gesture, something she wouldn't have done otherwise. And she pretty much says, she brought up Thunder Rosa calling her out briefly. We see Mina marching in the back. She hands her a champagne bottle, telling her to do it to her face. Winter is coming. Make Mina work. Pretty good stuff. I enjoy all these little backstage segments with Mariah. She's fantastic at it.
Agreed. She wasn't the most spectacular when she was like on her run up to the title, but when she first initially got it. But I think she's really come together to put it all I think it's all starting to like really like use the word sing a lot. I think that's what I would use for like her entire presentation.
I think one of the big things that was happening was she was trying to put on this character, and now she feels like a real person too, like just a real. Hateful fucking vengeance. So, main event time. Claudio Castagnoli takes on and defeats Brody King. If you were hoping for a match where they beat the hell out of each other, you got what you wanted. I don't know if I was feeling this match as much as it seems like other people were online. You know, of course, I was live skeeting along on Blue Sky, so you know, was keeping up with the conversation there. And just during this match, I was just like, I mean, I get what they're going for. I just don't think it worked for me as much as I was hoping. And I think part of it is, you know, maybe it has something to do with Claudio and the Death Riders right now and how they're going about it. But at the same time,
nah, dude, if this wasn't in the C2, I mean, you'd have the craziness of all members of the House of Black fighting the entire Death Riders off, and it'd be insane,
because they were tied down to the C2, yeah. Maybe that is
and
fair.
And maybe there was an argument that maybe the Claudio shouldn't have been in this year because of what's going on with the Death Riders, you know? Or maybe it should have been somebody like Pac, that way we wouldn't feel like Pac. Pac never feels like he needs that. It feels like, and then Claudio doesn't either, but it felt like in this match, Claudio could have an argument for that, you know what I mean? Whereas a Pac, you just David and Goliath it, you know what I mean? Yeah. So like,
but Claudio's winning. He's winning a lot of matches, 6 points now.
He's going to be a finalist this year, I think. He was last year, pretty close to the finals. I think he went on a streak of losses at the end, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at the end.
My favorite moment here was when Brody spiked him with a pile driver for two. I thought that was really neat. I enjoyed the closing sequence of it.
Tony Khan's got out of no nut taps rule to this tournament. It's getting out of control.
Yeah, no kidding. Gonzo bomb. He wanted the Gonzo bomb. Claudio, you know, poked the eyes out and grabbed the ref, hit a mule kick, connected on neutralizer. GG. But yeah. Let's jump into Rampage, where we have two more matches to cover. We have Okada versus Mark Briscoe in a Blue League Continental Classic match. First one-on-one meeting between the two, but they've teamed and faced off in tag matches before in the past. Lots of brawling out on the floor, and they get back into the ring. Okada maintains control. He drops him with a really sick DDT. Briscoe's bleeding. He's doing all his comebacks with punches as much as he can. Okada's shaking it off with forearms. He's hitting a headbutt. That stuns them both. This match was really, really fucking good. And it harkens back to the old FTR, no flips, just fists, or whatever the fuck it was. That's what this match was. Just fists. This match was fun. Yeah. Okada countered a J-driller a couple times.
Get Mark Briscoe, excursion to Japan. Let's go.
Yeah. Hit the Rainmaker, got the pin, 1-2-3. Just a really solid, enjoyable tournament match. which put Okada at 4 points, Kyle at 6, and they were facing off at Collision, which we know the result. So,
you know who'd be a good first feud back for fucking for them to be back and feuding with for Mark Briscoe, like when they come back from their like time off TV they're gonna have right now? I think him and Jack Perry could do something interesting.
I'd be down with that. I'd definitely be down with that. We get a Chris Jericho segment selling the pay-per-view. I thought I was watching Ring of Honor for a second. This was, since we haven't been keeping up with Ring of Honor lately, this felt so out of pocket to me. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Double checked to make sure I was on the right show, but they're setting up their Cardona versus Jericho match, which on paper, that to me just sounds brutal. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing for you. I'm a Ring of Honor defender here, and I will do the thing I used to do on Ring of Honor all the time, even though I don't really review that show anymore, though I'm thinking about bringing it back, because I do miss talking about it, and the show feels a little incomplete, wouldn't you agree, Charlie? But
not in the slightest.
Really? Okay, fair enough. But
when we got this going on, I'm like, dude, what the fuck's going on over there?
That's fair. Hey, this can be the last episodes of Ring of Honor, we don't know, but
yeah.
But I will do the old school Ring of Honor defense that I used to always pull, which is that, I mean, Mark Cardona is a known name. He's going to bring eyes to the Ring of Honor, you know, especially if they have him on television the next couple weeks, right? Which, who knows if they will, right? But but I don't think it does anything for anybody involved.
No.
And then what happens when Mark Cardona wins the thing? You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know.
Takes it along the indies, maybe? Maybe you could do something
that could
with
be
that.
Good. If they film him defending it on the indies and just throw that as a Ring of Honor. See, actually, that could be cool. Do the thing that you almost did with the international title. You know what I mean? At one point that they still kind of don't want to do for whatever reason.
Back to those fucking, you know, random smaller shows and putting it on Dark. I enjoyed that.
Love to see Matt Cardona do something like that. I think I'd more likely to see him, and this is no offense to Matt Cardona, just so the world title isn't tied up, I'd like to see him do that with, like, the TV title. It'd be fucking awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because he's got an association with television titles, too. You know what I mean? Like, that would be fucking sick. You know what I mean? Like, but anyway, Matt Cardona doesn't really do it for me.
We have Daniel Garcia versus the Beast Mortos in a Blue League Continental Classic match. Mortos countered a suplex right away, and then Garcia suplexed him on the floor. They're fighting on the floor. It's getting stiff lariats. Pop-up Samoan drop for Mortos to take really control of the match. Just stiff, fun match. There was
Mortos may never win a match in this tournament, but it's fucking every match is glorious, so I don't care.
It really is. There was a neck twist into a spinning power slam that got Mortos a near fall. Garcia hit him with a top rope superplex for another near fall. Shoulder breaker, spinning lariat, twisting moonsault off the top. I mean, you name it. This match was just a good time. The crowd was getting behind the Beast Mortos. Yeah, so Garcia got the pinfall with a jackknife cradle and got the pinfall. So, yeah, he's got 4 points. Tied with Okada, matched with Mark Briscoe on Collision the following night, and Commander faces Darby Allin's what they announced. The Vendetta get a quick squash together, and then we already covered the
I gotta talk about the Vendetta thing. So I'm all for loading up the last couple collisions if we want to just get people to watch it, right? Why can't the Vendetta get a little bit of time, though? Like, this is a new group you're debuting, and you give
first
them...
First match is a tag.
And you give them nothing?
Not even an entrance. A little brutal.
I saw people, I don't know if it was on Blue Sky or on Twitter, I can't remember, there was a little bit of discourse about this, though. I'm not a fan of this either. This is not what we do with the women's division. Why are we taking Deonna and Taya, two of our most talented women's wrestlers, and just shoving them to the fucking middle segment of the show? Not even the middle, like the between two segments of good matches on the show, giving them no time, and not even an entrance. That's insane.
Pretty brutal. Well, speaking of that, let's jump to GalaxyCon for this week's Collision, where you got the lead now.
Yeah, I wonder if Alex Damon was in the crowd. But yeah, probably not. I actually, you know, he was part of the show now. He might get down with some wrestling shit. Anyway, but then as soon as, you know, the Death Riders started murdering people, he was probably out. You know what I mean? But, you know.
You're out of here.
Nah, he just used the force. Used the force, Alex. Anyway, yeah, we had a little Continental Classic recap video introduction here. These videos for the Continental Classic, bro. I don't know who's editing the C2. They should like shout out who does the editing for certain things on AEW. I know that's not like super common, and maybe they don't want to be known for that, but I would love to give the credit to these people because the editors of the video packages in AEW are phenomenal. And I think WWE's got some really good ones too, but whoever's doing it, I mean, as long as it's not just being like outsourced by like some company or something, so they don't have like a name they can give or whatever, right? But like, if we could find out, I'd love to know, because it's great. And we'll open up with Darby versus Commander here, which, as we know, same thing I said throughout the other matches. Well, I didn't actually really say it about the other ones, but I would say it was through line throughout all the matches this week. The really smooth AAF train wrestling to open up matches. I mean, the only way I could describe this was, so the Darby, or was it Commander? Someone set up a chair on the outside. Oh, yeah, it was Darby. He sat Commander on, and he was going to do his little like low pay dive into him. And the only way I could describe this, Charlie, was Darby murdered himself on the chair.
What a fucking spot, dude.
I think they had to check him and make sure he wasn't hurt after rubbing his ass the rest of the match. You know what I mean? We had some A-dub chance. And Commander's timing on that spot, by the way, where he moved out. I think I've seen him do that before, where he moves out of the way of something like that. Like, very last second. He has, like, perfect fucking timing, bro. It's insane. Bro has no fear, which is, I mean, probably to be the luchador that does the flip off the running off the ropes, probably have to have no fear, right? You know? But yeah, let's see, what else did I really like from this? This is a really exciting, high flying, entertaining match of doom. That's what I described it as. So I've never seen Darby hit a Spanish fly before, I don't think, or have it hit on him like it was here. And the way he kind of just like stood up in it and like almost made it look super stiff, you know what I mean? Like, it was really cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, coffin drop on, classic draped over the ropes coffin drop. It's a really cool spot, by the way. I don't know where he came up with that from, but it's really solid. It looks like it actually is like an extra, more powerful version of the move. And then he falls to the outside, and then he immediately hits a fucking brutal tope. There's a monkey flip spot onto the apron, which didn't really quite land perfectly. Dog almost like broke his knee or leg or something on it, but it was pretty sick. And then I missed the finish here. I didn't get it written down. Do you have the article pulled up? I actually don't have it.
Yeah, it was, he hit the Last Supper flash pin.
Yeah, it was like a super, actually, I do remember that. I just didn't write it down. That's probably why, because I was so caught up in what was happening. So it's the Last Supper, but it's like a super, like, extra version of it. Like, he had, like, extra legs tied around and shit, you know what I mean? Like, which was really cool. And I love that Darby even is pulling out extra stops in this tournament. So, and it's, like, funny, the first two losses for Commander, they're, like, respectable losses. Like, anybody could have lost these matches in the same way that he did, you know what I mean? So, great start. He looks awesome. Anything you wanted to add about this, Charlie? Because I really enjoyed this one.
You know, the minute we saw Darby Allin being in this tournament, it was like, shit.
I don't think either of us considered him for our lists either.
No, but I never did. And I just didn't think about it. But now that he's here, it's like, yeah, this was a really fun start. I think this is the kind of match that, you know, maybe the people in the crowd that weren't the biggest wrestling fans, but were just go there and they're like, oh, fuck it. Why not? You see a match like this, you're instantly hooked. This is the kind of match that brings in new fans.
I've got a tournament for this guy to win, Charlie, because he's not winning this one. I don't think he's going to win the Owen, although I want him in next year's Owen. I think he'd be awesome in it. Have him be in every tournament every year. We need a tournament in between these two in the middle of the year that's just like a straight-up AEW title eliminator tournament. And it's just like eight people on both sides. Maybe not both sides. Four people on both sides. No, actually, we could do eight people. We have enough people. We could do eight people on both sides. Four matches. What would that be like? Two semifinal matches? Two semifinal matches. Like, whatever the fucking breakdown would be. You know what I mean? Like, like 8-4-2 or something like that, and then the finals, and then the winner goes on to face whoever it is at whatever pay per view there is at the point in the year. And you probably have to run that tournament for a while, but I feel like it would be fine, right?
Yeah, and Commanders is crushing this tournament. A 2-for-2 now in his matches. No surprise. Yeah, great, great start to a fucking awesome collision.
We cut to backstage where Kinosuke Takeshita is standing back there with Don Callis, and they're talking about how they're like, we're badass, we're looking for our next opponent, and then Powerhouse Hobbs shows up. So looks like we're gonna be getting Hobbs versus Takeshita, Charlie. And did we get a date on this? I think we did, right? Or have we not had it?
As far as I know, we have nothing on it yet, but probably the Holiday Bash.
Ooh, Holiday Bash would be good. That would make sense, because Hobbs doesn't generally get the pay-per-view shots, unfortunately. So, but maybe they'll like stretch it and they'll make it to World's End. But maybe not. Maybe Kinosuke is not wrestling on that show. It's possible. We got like 75 championships, as you know. So we got to get some of them on there. And it also depends on who's wrestling at Wrestle Dynasty. Like, this guy might be wrestling at Wrestle Dynasty. You know what I mean? So we may not have him wrestling that night just for so he can do something there, right? He could be Okada's opponent or something. You know. Anyway. Wrestle Dynasty International Women's Cup semifinal match, Charlie. We have our finalists. Willow Nightingale took on Serena Deeb here. A lot of really clean transitions in the lockups, pin combos. Actually, I would say this has been true about both of the sides of this AEW bracket of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've all been wrestled really well matches. We got tied up in knots here. That's fun. I love seeing Sarita do her thing out there, man. So she's good. So fucking good. How'd she get pegged as like the fucking like background girl and like the weird Festus and fucking CM Punk group? You know what I mean? Like weird.
I know, right?
Anyway, either way, no, actually, honestly, that was just the state of women's wrestling at the time. That's not her fault. You know what I mean? Like, not that I was saying that it was, but I'm saying, like, how is that how they saw her? But it was just the way they saw women's wrestling at the time, you know, which sucks, you know, but we're not there now. Thankfully, we get to see her do her thing now, and she's phenomenal at it. And I wrote in my notes, I could actually have seen both of them winning this, Charlie. I think that was probably true for the other one, too. But I think we all thought, well, but Jamie's going to be a finalist, right? You know what I mean? Like, you know, yeah. So Jamie versus Willow, probably the two most over babyface women in the company at this point, I would say. Right? Probably fair. And maybe not the most, but certainly up there, you know?
Oh, for babyface, definitely.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And yeah, just really good stuff. Yeah, like I said, Willow winner makes sense. So that's what I even wrote before the finish. So yeah, it's all good stuff here for me. And before I move on to the backstage promo we cut to next year. Well, I guess thoughts, and then who do you think's winning between Willow and Jamie? I mean, I think it's pretty much writes itself based on the story going on with Jamie right now, right?
Yeah, and I think they're really selling the stakes well. I mean, this is for a spot in the Tokyo Dome. Like, this is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing a good job selling that. I've taken fucking Willow. I think Willow's gonna... I think it's gonna be because of Julie Hart, which kind of sounds insane. I just... That's the way it feels like it's going. Personally, I would pick Jamie Hayter, because I think that'd be really crazy to see her at the Dome. But I love them both. You know, either way, I'm happy. I'm excited for this match. This could be one of those matches that... You never know what's going to happen. It might kick some fucking ass.
It'd be funny if, like, the way we avoided this was Willow just turns heel right before the match by beating the crap out of Julia Hart, so there's no chance of interfering.
Like, our next 3 weeks in a row, we have, like, Mariah May and Mina, Anna Jay and Mercedes, and then probably this match. Like, we're really loading up on high-quality women's matches. And I'm with you, Serena Deeb. She is so underappreciated because of how good she is. And you know what? Good for her for that fucking shirt she wore. Because that was not a good look. We talked about that on our show when that day happened, and good for her for wearing that. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Serena Deeb and Willow, so really enjoyed this.
Which is that she basically said she hasn't gone anywhere. And the thing I wanted to note here the most, because I think I put this on Blue Sky, I was saying that I think that this light makeup she wore here, where it was just the bottom half of her face, I'm assuming this was some sort of Comic-Con cosplay or getup or something like that she did just for, you know. But she was obviously still in makeup. I'd never seen her like this on AEW television, and I actually thought that was interesting. Maybe she could pull this out for a pay-per-view or for like a Winter Is Coming or something like that. You know what I mean? Like it one of those
good.
Types of shows.
It was very good look.
I would love for her to play around with that. But I also wrote this on my Blue Sky thing. I would completely understand if for her the half face paint that she does for her wrestling is a thing that is sacred to her. Like she doesn't. I'm not saying sacred in like a religious sense. I'm saying like as a person that wrestles or does anything in entertainment, they have these little... If little things that they don't want to change because it got a certain meaning or it's got, you know, maybe it's good luck or something like that. So I'm not even going to say that it's anything like that. But if she just didn't want to change it because she just doesn't want to change it because it has a certain meaning to her, maybe it has an actual meaning, you know what I mean? But that's what I'm saying. So if she didn't want to change that, I'd understand. But I think it'd be cool for her to play around with it a little bit because clearly, I'm assuming she's the one that does her makeup, is really good at it as well. So, you know, like... I'd be interested to see her to do anything with that. And I mean, she could win the title. You never know. She had a pretty solidly decent title reign. It wasn't like spectacular, but all the matches were pretty good in it the last time she was champion. So, you know, I mean, all right. So we had the Death Riders live from GalaxyCon, Charlie. So they come out to the ring. Nobody's like really like the crowd's just kind of like, oh, these motherfuckers, you know, like, you know, and they call out Jay White, which I thought was interesting that they chose to go out after him because it wasn't Hangman the one that appeared first last week. Anyway, and didn't they just show Hangman? What was weird was I think they showed Hangman in the segment before when they were like, I think they did like a previous like their little, like, I don't know if it was like a recap or something. I didn't write it down, but like, yeah. They did something to show like what had happened with this last week a little bit before they came out or maybe as they were coming out. The point is, you know, because they take like an hour to walk to the ring, so they could show an entire video package in the time, you know. Anyway, so they talk about Jay White. I forget what they said about Jay White. I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. I barely took away anything from this segment other than they're pissed at Jay White. They're going to murder Orange Cassidy if he tries to step up. Basically, Mox is like, Orange Cassidy, I already told you. I think Mox is a little lost in this one, dude. It felt like he was lost. That's why I didn't really get the substance of this. You know what I mean? Because he's like calling out Jay White. basically saying Jay White's a bitch, basically. I don't know. Like, I can't remember the, you know, actually, I'll look at the fucking articles. I wonder what he actually did say about Jay White, because all I took away from the thing that he said about Orange Cassidy was that if he pissed him off one more time, that he was going to kill him, basically. You know what I mean? Like, that part I did get. And I was like, so that made sense. And then, of course, Orange Music hits immediately, because that's how that works, right? But let me pull up that article really quickly, because I'm curious, what the fuck did he say about Jay White? Because, like, this when you talk about overbooked, right? And I feel like sometimes I can't fully explain to people what I mean. You know what I mean? When I say that, okay, nobody in the building wanted to be. Oh, yeah, this is the part that I don't understand, Charlie. He says nobody in the building wants to be AEW World Champion. And I'm like, okay, I get where he's going for with that, but it just sounds so weird when you say that. You know what I mean? Like,
he's like, and they don't have.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have what it takes. And I'm like, dude, what?
Okay,
what
so are this doing? Is the part that I get. So they're not ready to make the sacrifices. Say that instead of they don't want to be the champion, because they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't be fighting you, right? You know what I mean? Anyway. They're not worthy of looking at the title. I guess he did call out Hangman a little bit, but, like, Hangman is basically irrelevant in this, which, I mean, kind of isn't a feud anyway, let's be fucking honest, you know what I mean? No offense to Hangman, but he just got shoved into this out of nowhere, you know what I mean? And so did Jay White in a lot of ways, but I feel like Jay White, it made sense. I feel like we both would agree,
Jay
right?
Jay White just beat Hangman twice, like, that...
Yes, that made sense.
And then Hangman, oh, for losing, hey, buddy, here you go.
Yeah. Oh, and he also said he regretted not murdering Orange Cassidy, but I mean, he did try to, you know, so anyway. So yeah, we had Orange Cassidy come out, rolled into the ring, said, yeah, I'm never going to stop because I'm Orange Cassidy. Duh. You know, it's what is, yeah, he's not going to stop until Mox is no longer the champion. And then Mox is like, well, I guess you'll die then, you know, and they stomp him into actual dust and put thumbs in his eyes, and then they drag him away to the back. And I was like, oh, Orange Cassidy is actually going to die. Shit. So, yeah. I mean, they're news to me as well, Charlie. I'll be honest with you. I forgot how fucked this was until I actually read what I wrote down about this segment. That's why I had to go to the article, because I was like, did I miss something here? No, I actually didn't. This was just fucked.
And this is the part where they start doing the chemicals, right?
I'll just jump ahead to that here. FTR backstage. Because we go to commercial and then we come back. FTR backstage talking about Fight for the Fallen, which let's talk about that really quick. That should be a really fun show, obviously, because it's a big show for AEW to raise money for Asheville, North Carolina, which for those of you that don't know, I'm sure we all that are watching this podcast know, but if anyone just happens to be tuning in that doesn't know what happened there, somehow there was really bad damage from the hurricanes that came through a while ago, and they're still recovering, and there's still people in desperate need of help. So AEW, along with FTR, who live in Asheville, literally live in fucking Asheville, as does Adam Copeland. They're teaming up. I would love if Adam Copeland returned at that show. I don't know if he will. He might return before then. You know, it's possible. They've been teasing it up for a little while, but maybe if it's at that show, that'd be pretty cool. And it looks like, based on what happens in this segment, Charlie, because you hear like a noise in the background and the camera turns over dramatically and it's showing Orange Cassidy about to be, assassinated by the Death Riders with more chemicals. And FTR step in. So it looks like they'll possibly be battling the Death Riders in Asheville, which should be really cool. Thoughts?
I'm excited for the FTR aspect of it. I just, man, this Jon Moxley thing is losing me is the best way to put it, because it's losing me too.
I've
rolled my eyes pretty heavy at the chemical shit.
Yeah, it does feel very like WWE, doesn't it? Like
old WWE. Like, fucking, it's not Roman Reigns dog food level, but it's, like, really?
In
a company where we light people on fire?
I mean,
really? We're shoving Gatorade down his throat? Like, I guess.
Powerade, let's be honest.
It's just like...
No, it was Prime by Logan Paul.
In the same year where we've seen someone get, you know... close the goddamn garage door on someone, you know, like
look, this pro wrestling, there's gonna be some dumb shit, right?
Yeah,
but I mean, we followed this up with like one of the best matches of the tournament, so I mean, like, you know, I mean, you know,
yeah, I mean, look, and I haven't seen anyone even talking about this segment, so I'm assuming if I ventured off of Blue Sky that wouldn't be the case.
That's true. I'm sure
I haven't even seen anyone talking about this. I saw it for the first time this morning. I was like actually in disbelief what the fuck I just watched.
No, I mean I honestly.
But doesn't hurt the rest of the show, because the rest of the show was fucking awesome. So,
yeah, the rest of this is still one of the best collisions of the year.
I'm sure there's someone else that maybe they watched this and they were like, fuck yeah! You know?
I mean, I think the first time they did this, it was fine. But I think doing it twice, I feel like the bag thing worked because it felt very personal with Brian. I don't know. It just doesn't feel the same with Orange. I don't know why, but I don't know. But that being said, obviously we went into Kyle Fletcher versus Kazuchika Okada. Great match. The video package of the events leading up to World's End and Winter's Coming was pretty sick. I don't know any of the song or anything, but like it was still a pretty good little video package here, you know?
Again, they're doing a great job promoting future shows.
Yep. Something
this
we talk about.
This entire month feels mapped out very well.
Yes, which makes sense. Tony Khan does like to do long-term booking like months in advance. So he probably had this planned out months ago and maybe like, you know, I'm sure his plans are open to being changed, but like he likes to give some kind of skeleton of what he's going to be going for roughly so that he can stay on track, which is a lot of the reason why I think AEW sometimes gets accused of not telling stories is because it'll feel like they're not telling a story, but like it's a really, really slow burn. Like, let me go back earlier in this like podcast. There was something that I was thinking about that. There's like a slow burn story going on right now that's like that. And I'm trying to think what it is. Give me a second here. I lost it. But anyway, the point is like there's the Acclaim breakup. It's kind of like a slow burn. You know what I mean? Like, it's not been moving quickly at all. You know what I mean? And so it'll feel like it's not really telling a story, but they really are. It's just, it's taking a while to get there. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes, and I'm not saying AEW needs to speed that stuff up because I feel like that would probably just lead to situations where, you know, excuse me, where, you have, Beast Mortos took on Aaron Solo. I don't know how I feel about these tournament guys wrestling non-tournament matches on these cards. I mean, what are your thoughts? I don't know how to feel about it. Like, it's okay, I guess.
But here's what I'll say. I mean, he's 0-2. He needs to get his mojo back. So he beats the fuck out of Aaron Solo. I'm in.
Nice to see Aaron Solo.
He needs the mojo back. Maybe he personally is feeling like, you know, fuck, I know I'm better than this. Let me go take my hatred out on someone else. Poor Aaron Solo.
Yeah, 100%. We cut to backstage where we have
the
action.
The treatment of Aaron Solo on this was inhumane.
100%. This man was, this man probably needs a doctor afterward. And we know he's not going to get one for months. So, you know, I want to
be clear. Lawyer, though.
I'm going to be clear that we're not
attorney.
We're not being, he's his own lawyer. but no, I mean, we're not making fun of Phoenix, by the way. Obviously, if he had real medical issues, I feel like I made that clear earlier the way I talked about it. But of course, if that gets flipped out of context,
from here on out, it is what it is.
So Action Andretti and Lee were backstage with the other members of Top Flight, including Layla Gray, and they were all kind of like pissed at each other. And Action Andretti and Lee were basically saying, maybe we should go off on our own, bro, and be our own tag team and go win the titles, and you guys just sit back for a bit. And he's like, well, maybe we should just, you know, be two separate tag teams and see what happens. So they're going to fight. You mentioned earlier that you think that maybe they realize that they need each other.
That's the fan in me hoping the Top Flight, you know.
I think it's very possible Andretti and Leo are just a tag team. And I hate to say this, but I think they'll be a more successful tag team than Top Flight.
Give us this match at the final Rampage.
I'm down. If that's the send-off for Top Flight...
These guys have been the sole reason to tune into Rampage for about 2 years now, so...
This is true. When there's no Rampage for them, what happens to Top Flight? Oh, God. Anyway.
That's a world I don't want to live in.
We're going to live in it in about 3 weeks. Anyway, Nishirakawa took on Emi Sakura, and I mean, come on. Just some hard-hitting women's action here. We love Emi Sakura on this podcast.
Dude, Mina had fucking ground beef chest after this. She was looking like Bryan Danielson.
Daniel Bryan. Any chance we get to see her wrestle is always awesome. And I actually think Mina kicking out of the Queen's Gambit, I mean, to the fucking Joshi world, that just sent shockwaves. You know what I mean? Like, also, I love this was some classic Joshi bullshit. Ref was being used as a weapon. You know, Rick Knox, or no, it wasn't even Rick Knox, it was Mike Posey, right? You know, they love that shit. You know what I mean? When the refs get to be involved. That was fun. And then we cut to a Mariah versus Mina video package here. This feud is, again, told itself very easily, you know, and it's been very quick. And I actually kind of like that some of these feuds with Mariah, they're not long and drawn out. They hit, like, crack, and then they're done. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like watching a Mariah May feud is kind of like doing a drug, you know, a little bit in a lot of ways. That it's, like, got a limited time high. You know what I mean? You have to keep hitting it over and over again. Otherwise, and I don't think that it's going to have the diminishing effect that drugs do because Mariah just keeps adding. You know, it's almost like the drug gets more potent every time you do it or something, you know what I mean? Which doesn't even make sense. There's no science. It doesn't make sense. Anyway. Oh, yeah, and I like this little segment before their match. So Mark Briscoe and Daniel Garcia were backstage. And they had, like, how long has it been since we had, like, a couple of dudes wrestling each other? And they're just like, yeah, bro, we're bros. And, like, I'm going to go hard. You're going to go hard. We're both going to fucking go hard. And we're going to fucking – whoever wins, wins. You know, we both need this win. You need your first win. I need this win to be able to, you know, tie it up. Not tie it up, but to be, like, you know, ahead of Okada and, you know, second place. You know, like, I need this. And he's like, bro, you do, but I need to get a win. You know, and it's like it's kind of a cool little promo. I don't know. What you think?
I enjoyed it. Hey, I'm cool. You know, Daniel Garcia, future conglomeration, possibly.
Maybe. All right. So the dog was barking for a second. I don't know what's going on out there, but I was trying to see what he was doing. And then we had Mark Briscoe versus Daniel Garcia, which was almost my favorite this week. It was pretty close. I did not expect to like this match as much as I did. I like both guys in it, but I think it might have been the combination of the segment before leading into this plus the match itself. I mean, this was a really solidly good match, Charlie. And I think something I finally decided, I think I may have suggested this before, and I think we got a little down on him when he was Ring of Honor World Champion, and I think there's just kind of this Ring of Honor vortex that you can get caught in. The only one that seems to be unable to be caught in this vortex is Athena, because she's just that damn good, you know what I mean? And Billy Starks to an extent. But for the most part, if you go to Ring of Honor right now, even Chris Jericho has just been, like, he's basically not been on TV because of it, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, but it seems to happen to everybody except Athena, you know what I mean? And she doesn't make AEW TV, but she still manages to make Ring of Honor interesting to watch, at least, you know what I mean? And I think Mark Briscoe has an it factor that we haven't realized he does actually have. And I think might have been buried for years in the fact that he was in a tag team. Maybe Jay had it too. Maybe that's why they worked together as a tag team so well, because they both had it, and the combination of it together was just something that nobody had ever seen before. Kind of in the same way that, like, Dax and Cash have, you know what I mean? Where they're both just on their own would probably be over, but together as a tag team, they're like one of the most over teams ever, you know what I mean? So, but certainly Mark has it, and, you know, I think this match is an example of it. Because you see a lot of examples of, like, the kind of stuff that he would do as, like, when he would hit a hot tag in a Briscoe's match. And it was a lot of really great stuff like that. The energy was there. I was really enjoying what I was seeing from Danny in this, because Danny didn't look like he was, it looked like this was one of the harder matches Danny has had to wrestle in this tournament so far. And I like that, unlike last year, Mark Briscoe actually looks like he has a chance. He's not going to win this thing. He's already a little too far behind, I think, but he's certainly going to be a match guy, a guy that you don't want to, you don't want him to draw him as your last couple matches, because he could ruin your tournament. You know what I mean? Yeah, I just fucked Danny's right here. You know what I mean? We don't know. You
it's
know
what I mean? He's been the TNT champion. Massive win.
And that means we'll probably get to see that match going forward, which should be fun, because obviously this was great. So obviously running that back is never a bad idea. We could probably do that on TV, or we could save it. If we need an extra match for World's End, man, throw it on there. He's got a title win over him. If neither of them are in the finals, maybe that's what they do on that day. You know what I mean? Who knows? But, you know, but yeah, there was some great stuff in this, like the literal slap on the ass from Danny being like, come on, man, let's actually have a match here, you know? And the crowd was so into this. I mean, this was a pure babyface on babyface match, and both of them really needed the win. Big old superplex that Doom got averted. And oh my God, the sell that Mark did on the lariat from Danny, bro. Come on, man. And like I said, I'm okay with this being Danny's first loss in the tournament here, because Mark Briscoe should be winning. He should feel like he's the genuine threat to somebody's tournament run in this thing. And I feel like everybody needs to have that on them. And I want Commander to do it to somebody. Danny did it to somebody last year. Now it's going to be coming after him. So it's like, this is so good. So what's your thoughts on that? And then that takes us to the end of Collision.
I think, you know, when we do our post-tournament deep dive, I can already tell you one of the guys we're going to, when we're talking about the matches, Mark Briscoe is going to be, he's probably going to be the biggest surprise of the tournament. Neither of us were overly excited when he was announced, but we weren't upset about it, right? I think that's a safe way to put it. However, he's now going out here and, you know, if we're in kayfabe the night before, he had that match against Okada, which was just a blast. Then he goes out here against Daniel Garcia, and it's a really good main event with two baby faces, right? That we often talk about. You got it. That they're going for that redemption arc. And I thought they had a good, really good match. At one point, when Garcia did end up countering that J driller with the jackknife pin for a near fall, I actually thought that was going to be the way it was.
Yeah, Danny wins a lot of matches like that, so it felt like a perfect finish, and then there was more match after that, and it just kept getting better and better. That's why the match kept escalating. It did what all really great high spot matches do, and it kept escalating and escalating, and that was one of the things the Briscoes were always so great at when they would be against a really technical team like, you know, FTR or any of the other teams you want to pick, you know what I mean? Like, people will give me shit for saying this, but the Young Bucks are extremely technically sound despite all the BS that they get said about them, you know, like...
Yeah. Yeah. So, it takes us to Winter is Coming next week, right?
Yes, which already looks like one of the best shows of the year, potentially. So yeah. Awesome. I'm sure it's going to make a best of the year list probably somehow.
Matches list. We got Mariah May versus Mina Shirakawa for the AEW Women's World Championship. You got Mariah retaining, or are we getting a new champion?
If anybody's going to beat Mariah now, it would be Mina. So I'm going to say Mariah retains, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if we got a short-term Mina reign, and then it like got put on like Mercedes or something like that.
My God, hold on. Her versus Mercedes at the Dome? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm with you, Mariah, all the way. Claudio versus Will Ospreay. Brody King versus Ricochet. Those are Gold League matchups. Adam Cole versus Kyle O'Reilly. I think this match has a lot to prove.
Kyle wins.
I do too, and I want this to be the match where we look at Adam Cole and be like, okay, he's back. He's fucking back. So I have a lot of hopes for this match to really kind of restore not only our faith,
but a
lot of other people. Yeah, restore the feeling. Death Riders, John Moxley and Pac versus Orange Cassidy and Jay White. I have no idea where this program's going, but I'm excited to see a John Moxley and Pac tag
team. Babyfaces probably win here since they've been getting the shit kicked out of them lately. I mean,
yeah. Moxley take. I didn't even know. Jay White pins Moxley, send it. And then Rampage.
Jay White pins Moxley and then dips out immediately, and Orange Cassidy gets chemical death.
All we have announced on Rampage is Matt Cardona will appear. And then on Collision of Winter is coming this week. It's a triple Winter is coming. We have Jamie Hayter versus Willow for the International Women's Cup qualifier. So I hope that main event's the show and is an absolute fucking juggernaut.
That should be it could be Women's Bash of the Year.
Yeah. And we're already looking forward to Holiday Bash where they're loading that card up. So yeah, guys, thank you very much for sticking it out with us. This was a good show. I thought we had some good, meaningful discussions today.
Agreed.
And, you know, there is an alternate dimension where this podcast is never heard by anyone because it cut recording at 10 minutes, but I don't think that's going to be the case.
That would be unfortunate.
God, hope I fucking... No, if anything, you probably just missed my audio for a few minutes there, but Duke did a great job as always covering that, and you probably might not have even been able to tell. Thanks again, everyone. We'll see you next week for our Winter is Coming breakdown. And also next week, it's our Four Pillars podcast, and that's going to be a fun little ESE bonus episode that I think, you know, you guys are going to enjoy that. So thanks again. Hope you have a wonderful day.
Wonderful.
And we'll catch you next time. Wardlow, take us home, buddy!
Delete!
Yeah.